The Back Page, brought to you by Mirror Sport and backed by Ladbrokes.
We're back again. My name is Shane Stapleton. With me this week, I have Shane Mahon from Ladbrokes. How are you doing, Shane?
Not too bad, Shane. How are you?
Not too bad. Pat Nolan and Eamon Doggett from The Mirror. How are you, lads?
All good. Thanks.
Good stuff. Lads, Leopardstown was last weekend. I presume you came home with one hand as long as the other, Shane?
I was broadcasting on course, actually, for the studio on Ladbrokes, and decent enough day. Could have been better. Outlander was just done in the big race of the day, the Irish Gold Cup, by Ed Wolf, one of JP McManus's runners. So that was a bit disappointing. But all in all, the 2 days, it was a cracking day's racing. Really, yeah. The best we'll see the side of Cheltenham anyway.
Eamon, you left a few pounds behind you.
Yeah, no, I lost a good bit of money, but
much?
Oh, we can't go into that. My parents could be listening. No, I had a few winners, but then I went crazy at the end after the drinks kicked in. I think bumped into Michael Leary actually a few times in the toilet. Every time I bumped into him, his horse won the next race, and needless to say, I didn't back it.
You were on P schedule together, were you?
Yeah, same ladder size. Find out something new every day, and then I was actually beside Mr. Adjudicator, who won the big juvenile herd of their owners in the stands. When that won, they're going absolutely nuts. And of course, I wasn't on that either. So, yeah.
Ideal. Yeah. We'll come to the big horse racing this weekend a little bit later in the show. What we're going to focus on at the start is Premier League, a little bit of there's Allianz Football League this weekend. We'll touch on the rugby. Of course, the whole country has collectively assumed a position for Johnny Sexton ever since his late heroics and his drop goal against France. It's been pathetic to read all the articles about it, Pat, hasn't it?
What, just the,
just the whole country? The fawning.
Yeah.
Oh, jeez.
And around, but in fairness, to execute the kick the way he executed it was
It was brilliant and all that, but you know, for everyone to be just, it's
over the top kind of reaction, you think? Yeah.
Just,
yeah,
and, well, it's and just sickening level of, you know, the word bravery and heroism.
Oh, yeah.
As I always say, just over the top. It's been sickening. But we'll come to round two of the Six Nations later on. And the week that Wes Houlihan retires from international
just
football.
Today, yeah.
Mad thing there with him is he was first in the squad in 2002, had his first cap in 2008, 1 minute against Colombia.
And then get another cap for, what was it, 6 years?
Until 2012. Yeah. So it was actually 1 minute in the space of a decade is what he had, which is a bit mad. His greatest moment, was it the Sweden goal in the Euros or was it the assist for Robbie Brady?
I think the assist for Robbie Brady.
Yeah, yeah, I was in the stadium that day.
I was as well.
I was absolutely balubus.
We were nearly on the pitch. We were actually only 4 or 5 rows from the front. We had great seats. And it was just absolutely bedlam.
Right. Bedlam. Let's wrap it up. Lock it up. Right, we'll go for Spurs-Arsenal. That's the first game. Saturday at 12:30 at Wembley. Pat, you put a little stat into my running order here, which I'm going to steal. It's the first meeting of the clubs at Wembley since the 1993 FA Cup semi-final.
Yeah.
I dug a little deeper. Tony Adams with the winner.
I remember recording that match. I still have it on VHS at home. I think that was
along
the
with
first
your communion
year,
money. Along with your communion money, no doubt.
Yeah, and the confirmation, yeah. That was the first year that both FA Cup semi-finals were held at Wembley. Sheffield United and Sheffield Wednesday were in the other semi-final, so it was two derbies in either semi-final. Yeah, that's kind of a forgotten game because when people think of FA Cup semi-finals with Spurs and Arsenal at Wembley, they think of Paul Gascoigne's free kick in 1991. Mm. But I remember Tony Adams got the winner with a header from a free kick, all right. I remember actually... randomly a few years later watching They Think It's All Over, and they played back a pre-match interview with Ray Parler where you had to guess the amount of times he said obviously in the course of the interview. I think he came in at 7 over 30 second interview, but anyway, gone off tangent a bit there,
obviously.
I think with this game, Arsenal,
it's 50 against 6 here. They're as tight as the ducks.
Well, there is a bit of distance from Arsenal to the Champions League places. I think Arsenal, I don't see them making the top four, but they tend to pull out a result which cons people into thinking that they're turning a corner maybe a couple of times a season, and this could be one such occasion. That just looking at their record at Wembley, they've won the last 7 games at Wembley. Obviously, they've picked up a few FA Cups in the last few years, Community Shield, etc. So I think that counts for something. I think there'll be goals in it, and if you're looking for value, I think Arsenal to win at 18-5 with 2.5 goals or more.
We'll get the prices off you now, Shane, but just to look at the recent form, Spurs drew 2-2 at Liverpool, and we saw the controversy over the VAR and all that kind of stuff, and they beat Newport 2-0, Padraig Amiens, Newport 2-0 during the week.
The Carloman.
Yeah. Arsenal come in after a 5-1 win over Everton, but previously lost 3-1 to Swansea, which backs up what Pat says, that they can fool you one week and then the next week they're absolute dog.
I actually, at the start of the season, I fancied a few quid at around 4-1 on Arsenal to be the top London club. Now, you take out Spurs maybe at the minute and you're thinking, you know, Chelsea with their recent lackluster efforts at the beginning with the show, but I don't know what it is with that. It's the same old Arsenal, really, isn't it? Every season. And
what are the prices there?
For the match betting itself, Spurs even money, the draw 11-4. Arsenal are at 12-5. And don't forget as well, one of our several double odds matches this weekend in your Ladbrokes shop. If you have a winning first goal score bet that clicks inside the first 15 minutes, you get paid out at double the odds.
I mean, it was an interesting January for Arsenal. You know, Mkhitaryan in, Aubameyang in, and scoring a lovely goal on his debut. But surely it's going to come back to the same old thing, that they don't have a platform at midfield or in defence. You know, somebody like a Wanyama or, you know, you can probably like a Matic or something like that to kind of create that platform for these guys to be let off the leash.
I think for me, it's like a stubbornness with Wenger. He's too stubborn. He knows probably in deep down they do need that kind of ugly player who'll break things up, but he just doesn't want to get away from his ethos of the, you know, the good player. And he's too loyal to his players for me. Like the Ramseys, it took him, 10 years to get rid of Walcott when he should have gone ages ago. And I think when you look at the spine of these teams, and considering Arsenal fans are always giving out about not spending enough, they spent more than Spurs have. And you look at the spine as a team, like you got Lloris, Vertonghen, probably Alderweireld. I don't know if Alderweireld's back now, is he? But for Spurs, compare that to Mustafi, Koscielny, and then Xhaka, Ramsey.
Shaq is brutal, isn't he?
Oh, he's terrible. And then nothing compared to Dier and Dembele, who are strong. And then you got Kane compared to... I always think the spine of the team. Like, Arsenal is okay buying these kind of flair players out wide, your Mkhitaryans, your Aubameyangs. But I think it comes down to the spine of the team. And I can't see anything but Spurs win here.
And Arsenal got rid of their one option in Giroud, whereas Kane, you can imagine how much, a bit like Drogba when he was against Arsenal for years
He's going to love it,
He just fancies bullying these lads. So I was actually looking at halftime draw, Tottenham full-time, 21-5. I don't think it's too bad. It might take a little bit of time to break them down, but sure. Will Lucas Moura get his debut? Hard to know. He looks an exciting player, but...
On the first goal scorer, Marcus, actually, he is 8-1 actually to score first. Harry Kane 14-5, which is a bit bigger than what he has been in recent weeks against inferior opposition, if you want to call them that. Aubameyang around about 5-1. Lacazette 6-1. It's hard to know whether or not he's going to start, really. Son is at 6-1. Dele Alli been in the news for all the wrong reasons over the last week at 13-2. But don't forget, that'll double at 13-1 if he scores inside the first 15.
No awards
minutes,
for cinematography on that one. We won't. It'll be the unspoken truth.
I wouldn't be an authority on the quality of cinematography for that sort of thing.
Right, okay.
You are clear, Shane.
Right, so I'd say we're all going with the Spurs win there, are we?
Yeah, tentatively. Wouldn't be one to get really stuck into. But
just in terms of looking for value, I think, like I said, if depending on which Arsenal turns up, 18-5 for them to win, over 2.5 goals is...
It's a nice cosy.
Given their record at Wembley, which I think is I think not insignificant.
The over is over 2.5 is definitely a play here. I think it'll definitely be more than 2 goals.
All right, it's Saturday at 5:30 then, the late kickoff. First against 8, Man City against Leicester City. A tired Man City. They've just gotten 3 days off. Chelsea actually have as well. But they got 3 days off, and Kevin De Bruyne was saying that, you know, I've said it before, you feel great after 10 games, okay for 10 games, and then the rest of the season you feel rubbish. So... You know, I mean, is that any excuse for Man City? They have a massive squad. Their subs are worth more than most teams starting 11. So do you give them any excuse, Pat?
No, not when you're spending 50 million on your fullbacks, you know, that doesn't wash with me. They've got more money than any club probably in world football. So he does rotate the squad. It's not like 30, 40 years ago or even less when... You know, when teams were pulling from a panel of squad of 15, 16 players max. So, and I'd expect them to win. You know, Leicester are, they're obviously a bit more steady than they were in last season. Obviously a lot of controversy there and behind the scenes with Riyad Mahrez, which can't have obviously they're losing his quality as a player. He's he's their best player.
Really,
plus,
yeah,
plus,
I mean, like he didn't
disruption
get
disruption of the team spirit, etc. Yeah. So
just because he didn't get a transfer to Man City, I want to present a Sunday game, but I'm not going to traumatize the Prem here over it, am I? So City, as close as it's come to them having faltering form, 7 points from the last 12, having lost to Liverpool recently. Is there any case for Leicester getting a shock win here?
I don't think
they. It's hard to see them winning.
14-1 for the win,
point
by
maybe,
the way.
But I couldn't see anything beyond that. Like,
are there any other prices that you'd be tempted to have a nibble on?
So just on the match betting itself, Shane, 1-5 City at home. Of course, the draw 11-2. Leicester, I mentioned 14-1. Couple of hashtag get a price featured here online. Just if you're getting stuck into these, City to win. Man City, that is. Aguero to have 5 or more shots, and De Bruyne to win 2 or more tackles, 15-4. So if you fancy a kind of an obscure kind of bet there in that match, and also 28-1 about Leicester City to win, Vardy to have 2 or more shots, and Wilfred Ndidi to win 4 or more tackles. So
yeah, it's hard to imagine it happening. Like, it's very hard to find value in this that you can back up, because like you can find value all right, but the chances of Leicester coming through or getting a certain amount of goals, it seems unlikely. But
both teams to score, maybe just a shade of odds on 20-23. You can see maybe City winning 3 or 4-1.
If Mahrez was playing and he was
in
top 4.
Yeah, well, that's it as well, yeah.
But like City halftime, full time is 3-4. I mean, it's not amazing, but I think there's a fair old chance of that coming through.
One for your accumulators, I think,
like
this weekend.
City and over 3.5 goals in the match. I can see there being 4 goals.
What price is that?
5-4. So I can see Leicester maybe getting 1, maybe 3-1, maybe 4. I think that sees value. But the Mahrez situation reminds me of, just go back to that quickly, when Hazard, when he had that great season with Mourinho, then he kind of went totally off the ball the next season. He kind of sulking for the rest of the season. Like, that cost him his move to Real Madrid, I think. And if Mahrez sulks the rest of the season, he's not going to go to Man City anyway, because they only want him now because Sané's injured.
He could end up at Newcastle or something like that. A fate worse than football, I guess, I imagine. So you mentioned Hazard. He'll be playing this Monday coming, 8 p.m, Chelsea against West Brom. Two teams in relegation form, actually. Chelsea have just 2 wins from 10 games this year, and West Brom, under Alan Pardew, who we all know is an absolute shyster, 1 win from their last 24 Premier League games, both in awful form. What are the prices like, Shane?
Fairly obscure, to be honest. Albeit Chelsea are at home here, they're 4-11 for the win, the draw 15-4, West Brom 8-1 against. Don't forget as well, if West Brom were in any kind of form here, that 8-1 would definitely be tempting. But I wouldn't want to play in this match whatsoever, to be honest.
Collectively, like, they've 9 points from the last 30.
Yeah.
So Chelsea with 5 points and West Brom with 4. Two teams that, like, Chelsea have lost by a combined 6 goals to Watford and Bournemouth in their last 2 games. Pat, would you confidently go near Chelsea to win this one? Giroud in the next now?
No, definitely not. But although, I'd expect them to win, but I expect them to beat Watford the other night, and they lost 4-1. No,
you're a huge Liverpool fan, and Sturridge is after going to West Brom. Do you think there's any chance he could actually do something there?
Yeah, I do. Now, whether they'd have the quality to give him the type of service he needs, I would have my doubts. But I would be, from a Liverpool point of view, I think it was ridiculous that they let him go, because they needed to at least consolidate the position they have. And beyond the front, the Fab Four as they're called, your next option then is Danny Ings. So I prefer to have Sturridge to call on that situation. So from West Brom's point of view, I think it was a good signing. They still haven't got a bounce from Pardew, really, albeit
they
beat Liverpool in the cup. Well, he's done it before at Palace, in fairness to him, and he did get a bounce out of Newcastle for a season or two. So it's probably as good a fixture as Chelsea could have hoped for, perhaps on the back of what they're going through. But I think we all know Conte is going to be gone sooner or later. If they lose this one, you'd imagine that'll be it. Like, as of now, I would still expect he'll probably see the season out. But if this run keeps up or goes even one match further, that could be it for him.
What would be hugely disappointing after that war of words between Conte and Mourinho recently is that if Conte got the bullet before they meet at Old Trafford on February 25th. Now, it seems ostensibly it seems like that'll be really exciting. It'll probably be a horrendously boring game. United and Chelsea so often disappoints, but imagine if that didn't happen. It'd be the disappointment of the season, I think. Because this season is just cities, we all know that.
Well, if Conte,
we need distractions.
If Conte stays on the sideline come that match in February, you know, I think there'll be more action on the sideline more so than on the pitch, to be honest.
Yeah, well, I think Jack he'd be tuning in for the post-match, post-match interviews more than 90 minutes.
So who's going to have a nibble on West Brom here? Eamon, you're chasing your losses from Leopardstown.
Yeah, I might. Like, as you say, 8-1 was a shame.
8-1, yeah.
That's tempting given Chelsea's form. As you're saying, West Brom are in bad form as well. I just wonder if the Chelsea players care at the moment, if they want to get Conte fired or if they want to play for him. If Conte seems really it's disorientating. It happens with every Chelsea manager under Abramovich. Mm. After a few seasons, they just get annoyed with Abramovich.
They get a bit bored, don't they?
Yeah. And
my tip here now would be, I'm big into these half-time, full-time ones, but draw and then Chelsea to win is 14-5. It's about as good a value as I could find.
That's good, yeah.
Just one final game I want to touch on, since we have a massive dyed-in-the-wool Liverpool fan here, Pat. Southampton, which is basically Southampton versus Southampton.
Yeah, I was going to say that.
Liverpool. Yeah. I mean, you basically recruited Southampton.
Yeah, and
Then Liverpool, Barcelona recruit your players eventually. So it's feeder system all the way.
Something like that, yeah. Although I don't remember Coutinho playing for Southampton.
You get the point.
Yeah.
I get the point. And actually, despite all the players they've taken from Southampton, one of them I would like to see them take is possibly Fraser Forster, because I think he's an excellent goalkeeper, and Liverpool haven't had an excellent goalkeeper since Ray Clements, possibly. But it's a difficult game. Liverpool haven't done particularly well at Southampton the last couple of years. They were 2-0 up there a couple of years ago, and lost 3-2, and that probably paved the way for Mane signing for Liverpool, because he instigated the comeback that day. I think I would go for a draw on that.
The draw itself 27-10, Southampton for the win 13-4, and Liverpool a shade of odds on 4-5.
Yeah.
Of all the Liverpool goalies whose careers you're rubbishing down through the years, who was the worst? Because what comes to mind is Sander Westerveld, Jerzy Dudek, who won the Champions League for you.
Well,
David James. Who else in there?
All of those goalkeepers you mentioned had periods of
good and bad.
Yeah, like Jerzy Dudek's first full season was outstanding, but then he fell off the wagon completely. And if you remember the game against United at Old Trafford, where he handed two goals to Diego Forlan, I don't think he ever recovered from that. Although he was reasonable again, he steadied the ship a bit when they won the Champions League. I'd say the best goalie I've seen since I've started supporting Liverpool is probably Pepe Reina, and I think they shouldn't have let him go when they did. And I think he's still playing at a fairly high level, and Mignolet and Karius haven't been up to it since. Neither is Brad Jones and other two fellas that have been thrown in there. So it's been like Grobbelaar was obviously a decent keeper, but you never knew what he was going to do next. So they've lacked stability in that position, and I don't necessarily think they need to go out and spend money to replace Coutinho. If they just bought a safe pair of hands, pardon the pun, that would be the squad and the team would be far more stronger for that than feeling they have to get like placement for Coutinho. I think they need another centre half, and they badly need a goalkeeper.
Are you happy with supporting Liverpool, whereby every game is exciting, or would you like a bit more humdrum and you'll grind your way to the title?
The latter, definitely. As Jackie Gall once tweeted, they've been ruining weekends for the last 25 years. Mm. Recent games, I actually fancied them to beat City. I fancied them to beat Spurs. I fancied them to beat Porto in the Champions League last 16. I have very little confidence about the Southampton fixture. I was very worried about the Swansea fixture, the West Brom game. I could do without that sort of stress in my life.
Champions League is the only thing they can win now, which is disappointing, isn't it? The FA Cup.
Yeah, the FA Cup was really worth going after. And I'm not saying they didn't go after it, but at the same time, he did put Moreno back into the team for that West Brom game.
Sounds like you're questioning Klopp.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I'm not saying his position isn't terrible or anything like that. But
do you think he's a bit too much like he's putting out this image there, and that's kind of people are getting distracted by his image and therefore not microanalyzing what he's doing with the team?
I'd say there's a bit of that, but I wouldn't say he's putting it out there. I think that's just the way he is, and I wouldn't say he's doing it for cynical reasons. Or
I think some of it feels a bit staged to me. Like,
I think that's just probably the way he is. He's just a bit.
Started off with the Beatles shirt, didn't it? Yeah. Wearing the Beatles shirts at one of his first press conferences because Liverpool, whatever.
Is it Hank Scorpio from The Simpsons they often compare him with? Or have I? That could be my way to the mark there.
Probably.
Anyway, maybe. That's the football. Moving on to another type of football, the Allianz League is back this weekend. No hurling, no glorious stick game, but there is a full round. Well, there is actually in the All-Ireland Club semi-finals. But in the football this weekend, the game that jumps out, Pat, is Dublin Donegal, surely. Well, actually, what game are you going to be covering for tomorrow?
I'll be covering Galway Mayo.
Galway Mayo on Sunday, yeah.
Salt Hill.
Dublin Donegal.
You couldn't see anything other than a Dublin win, realistically. Donegal are under a pump a bit now, and they actually cancelled their scheduled press events ahead of this game after losing their first two games by a point.
Do you know what I feel about that now? Cancelling press events. I remember in 2014, Tipperary stopped talking to the media for a number of weeks after losing maybe two or three
years.
A number of weeks. So they cancelled speaking to the media for a few weeks. I couldn't get an interview. I did an interview with one player, and then I was told, oh, you can't use that or whatever for a few weeks and all this kind of stuff. But Tip had lost a few games, and the whole narrative out there from all the columnists across the country was that Tip are in crisis. If you put someone out to speak to the media, they'll talk about, oh, things are going to turn shortly. Absolutely. So you actually can help control the narrative if you put players out. So I think from Donegal's point of view, this adds to the kind of storyline that they're struggling. Whereas if you just send out Michael Murphy, he'd talk about, you know, you be patient, you build a team, etc.
Absolutely, 100%. Now, some of these teams... Well, a minority of inter-county teams do have press communications managers or whatever liaison people. But I don't know what advice they're giving them, but managers don't seem to be heeding it. I don't see how, this is one of Donegal's bigger games this year. I don't see what that to lose, as you say, by talking ahead of the game. It also must be said that Dublin aren't exactly... firing players out there either. Certainly not ones that are going to be playing in the game anyway. As for the game itself, Dublin have only maybe a month's training done at this stage, and they've already won two games pretty convincingly.
Those lads are hammering the gym out of it and doing their own programmes for months beforehand. I don't read too much into that.
South Africa, was it?
Yeah. And plus they're... Seen as they won the All Ireland, they're in high training up until September.
Mm. Up and down Table Mountain every day, I believe, yeah.
But most teams are winding up in July, you know, so they do have 2 months on most of the country anyway. So in terms of when they finish up. But they've started both their games poorly so far, Dublin, giving, I suppose, the opposition a bit of a chance or a bit of hope before grinding them down. But the handicap is 7 points. I think that's 10 to 11. When you look at Donegal conceding 218 down in Kerry, I would be surprised if there's open on Saturday as the word that particular day, especially after losing two matches. But I would still see Dublin clearing that 7 point handicap.
It's actually 11 to 10 as well.
11 to 10, yeah. Over the course of 70 minutes, you'd expect them to have more than 7 points to spare. I think getting back to Croke Park and their third match, I think they're gonna improve week on week. They'll be better than they were last week and the week before, so it spells trouble for Donegal.
Yeah, I wouldn't be shocked to see Brian Fenton walking through again. He's looking like the premier midfielder in the country at the moment.
Yeah, he really is. I think that's kind of a no contest now. By the time he's finished, he's probably maybe taken over from Darragh O'Shea, who was the iconic midfielder of the last decade, say. I don't think there's... David Morn has troubled him a bit.
He has
past.
A lot of the qualities. You know, he wouldn't be up and down like a train quite as much like Brian Fenton, but he has the footballing qualities, I would imagine. Colm Cavanagh is an excellent midfielder, but very different sort of skill set.
Plays a different role as well.
But he's actually improved his skill set massively in the last couple of years. Before, you would have thought of him as a dogged, you know, roadblock.
His point-scoring ability.
But he's actually turned into a real footballer as well.
He probably doesn't get into the danger areas enough with Tyrone's style of play to I suppose exhibit his skill set to the degree that he might want to. But but no, Fenton is a machine, and for all he's only lost one league or championship game for Dublin since he came on the team, and I don't see him losing another one this weekend anyway.
Yeah, so Dublin, much like Man City, as I said, a little bit of a... It's hard to get too much value on them. Another player that I want to look at will be featuring for Tipperary footballers this weekend as they travel to Cusack Park to play Clare. Michael Quinlivan, where does he... Like, he scored glorious goals in the last couple of weeks against Cork and against Roscommon as well. Beautiful individual goal, which showed a lot of poise at the end. The sort of like considered finish that you'd expect from the likes of Gooch. Now, very different player. But outside of Mayo and Dublin and maybe Kerry, is there a better full forward in the game? And I mean strictly full forward, not a corner forward type job. I mean, maybe Jamie Clark or someone like that is corner slash full forward, but... You know, Michael Quinlivan, is there a bigger threat on an inside line out
well,
there?
Well, I wouldn't even put down the limitations of going outside Dublin, Kerry, or...
Then don't. Who's
or,
better?
Or Mayo. Like, would he get in their teams? Absolutely.
Where would you rank him with the likes of Andy Moran, with the likes of James O'Donoghue, whose form hasn't been quite to the same level of 2014 in the last few years? Like, overall, where does Quinlivan rank?
I think he's right up there. Like,
I want you to be more specific than I think right up there.
I would put
that
him...
That fence.
If I was picking, like, I won't say an all-star team, because all-stars are picked on a kind of different set of criteria. But if you were picking an All-Ireland 15, I would definitely have him full forward.
Would you take him ahead of Dean Rock?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Would you take him ahead of Paul Gainey? I think that's actually...
That's interesting. I would facilitate the two of them in the football.
Would you?
Yeah, I would. Yeah.
Taiwan in the 40.
Yeah. I'd say it'd be all right. See, that's why we need the Railway Cup back. And get them to play proper teams, have a Paddy's Day or some old day, let everyone else have the weekend off, promote it properly, put it in Croker, and I want to see that. So, who's going to win the game? Clare have kind of fallen off a cliff a little bit. Have they got hammered by Meath? Tip collapsed against Roscommon. Who's going to win this?
Yeah, I'd be amazed if Tip don't win it, to be honest. I think it's very worrying when you see Clare go up to Meath, who aren't exactly, front
no world
contenders
beaters,
for even a Leinster title. And they lose by 14 points. I think Colm Collins has done an unbelievable job with Clare over the last few years with like... In comparison to Tipperary, who have had a fair bit of underage success, Clare have had absolutely none, and yet he's got them to an All-Ireland quarter final and to be competitive in Division 2. They were actually challenging for promotion, you could argue, at one stage of last year to get
Cork
to Division 1. Now they tailed off after that. But I just think they couldn't get over the line against an inexperienced Cavan team in their first round. They get hammered by Meath in the second round. I think Tip are electric going forward. Like, it isn't just the Quinlivan show either. And I can see them beating Clare with much more comfort than the 2-point handicap would suggest.
I just would have been in Cusack Park. I love the old half-time, full-time to look for a bit of value. Clare half-time, Tip full-time is 5-1. Possibly
you do
not
love
the
worst. A half-time, full-time.
Sure, look.
Depends who wins the toss, really. What way the wind is going.
No, you have it. Shane, do you have the match betting on
The match betting on the Clare and Tip match. I'll just scroll back up here. Clare at 13-8, the draw 15-2. Tip at 8-13. On the handicap front, it is 2 points. Clare plus 2, 5-6. Tip minus 2, 6-5.
Armagh Longford, the big one. Armagh minus 3 versus Longford. You like, Pat, is it?
Yeah.
5-6.
It's a top of the table clash. Both teams have won their opening games. I think Longford have benefited by playing. Like, they've done what they had to do, and they've done it very impressively. But they've beaten two teams who are in a transitional phase, and Derry are without their slot nil players, which is a big loss.
Longford won that by 6 or 7 points, too.
Yeah, yeah. They have a good record against Derry. They've beaten them 3 times in the qualifiers over the years as well.
The one thing I'd say now about Longford as well, which might add to your Armagh minus 3, is Sean McCormick is out. He's after getting injured, and he's a glorious footballer. I think Robbie Smith, who's got a wand of a left foot, was held scoreless the last day, too. So. Yeah. You know, it's hard to actually debate against your minus 3 Armagh.
Yeah, and when you see Armagh go to Cusack Park in Mullingar and win by 9 points, I think it was. You know, and they started very well against Sligo as well. They're putting up big scores, so they're playing at home. I think it all adds points to a reasonably comfortable, well, more comfortable than 3-point margin, I would think, victory for Armagh.
Now, if you disagree with Pat, plus 3 on Longford is 11-10. I'm not going to talk about Coola versus Liam Mellows, obviously, because I'm part of the Coola panel. So, Pat, off you go.
Yeah, it is, I think, 7-point handicap there.
I think it is. I'll get it up here in 1 second.
Yeah, but Coola's record outside of the Dublin Senior Hurling Championship is outstanding over the last 3 years. They've won 3 in a row in Dublin, and they just seem to steamroll all opposition outside of their own county. Their average winning margin outside of Dublin is 11 points over the last 3 years. They've only lost one game, which was to Owlert in the 2015 Leinster final. I think the quality of champion that Galway has produced has dipped over the last few years. You had a situation where Sarsfields were beaten in a semi-final a couple of years ago by Cushendall. And then Cushendall got wiped out in the final by Napiershiek. So, I think Portumna were the last Galway team to win the All-Ireland, and that Portumna team was a pale shadow of the Portumna team that had dominated a few years previously. So I think the standards maybe dip somewhat in Galway, and I just think in the heel of the hunt, Coola will have more than 7 points to spare on Liam Mellows by the end of it. I think that's 4-5.
Yeah, 4-5 about Coola -7, Liam Mellows +7, 11-10. The match betting itself, Coola 1-8, the draw 14-1, 11-2 about Liam Mellows.
Now I'll tune back in again, lads. Well, that's the end of the GAA. We'll move on to the rugby now. So Ireland obviously beat France last week, as we've mentioned. There was the big HIA controversy about the concussion in Antoine Dupont's knee. And what kind of came to mind when I thought about it was the ludicrousness of it was best summed up in some song lyrics by Bruce Springsteen. It kind of went like this. Old Dan Tucker was a fine old man, washed his face with a frying pan, combed his hair with a wagon wheel, and died with a toothache in his heel. So a concussion in your knee, kind of, it brought that to mind.
Lads, seen on Twitter, someone said the song of France goes, the knee bone's connected to the head bone. That's quite good, I thought.
Yeah, it's absolutely ludicrous. So, great stuff from Johnny Sexton. And not just the drop goal, the cross-field kick, the restart, obviously, that was won by Ian Henderson as well. Exceptional stuff, got the Six Nations off on the right footing. Italy are just going to be cannon fodder this weekend, surely.
Yeah, it's an absolute must that Ireland get the bonus point. And I think the spread is 34 points. Like, it's probably unlikely that Ireland would win the championship by Grand Slam, given that it's only happened once since 1949 or 48. I think they need to take the opportunity to build their points. And actually, the last time, the last year Ireland won the championship, I think that they destroyed Italy in the second last game. Actually, no, it was O'Driscoll's last year. It was his last home international before they went to beat France the following week. And they destroyed Italy at the Aviva, which effectively won the championship for them. And it meant all they had to do was go and beat France the following week by any margin at all. So, I think they need to do a number on Italy and just build up the points tally, because come the back end of the competition, you would imagine Italy will be struggling in terms of personnel with injuries and that, and other teams will do a number on them. So Ireland need to make the most of this opportunity this weekend.
Yeah, I don't really see it. I wouldn't be too much worried about the bonus, but I can understand what Pat's saying. But I think when we got this strength and depth now, I'd like to see, I think the team's going to be announced during this, but I'd like to see a lot of use the strength and depth and make some changes. Like, I'd like to see Sexton arrested. He deserves the rest. and maybe a Carberry come in, maybe Chancellor Moore. I think you mentioned Conan. We have so many options. Like, I remember when I first started watching Ireland play, John Hayes seemed to be our only prop forward in the country. Yeah. And now we've got like so much talent up there. So you could bring Jack McGrath in for Healy. You can bring Ruddock or however in. And I see what Ladbrokes are 1-500. Not to have a pop at Ladbrokes, but I think that just seems crazy to me.
Well, I have to correct you now. 250-1 on now as of the last couple of minutes.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, the team
got a bit of sense.
So that says that means if they play the match 250 times, Ladbrokes see Ireland win only once. So,
well, Italy only once.
Yeah. I see them winning twice. Sorry, Italy.
The team or the squad hasn't been announced at the time of recording, but it'd be nice to see the likes of Jordan Larmour getting a bit of game time. Yeah. He's obviously not going to start the big games, but surely this is going to be Ireland running train all over. Yeah, Italy, I mean, really.
34 points. It's gas as well, the amount of, you know, Six Nations tournaments that we've seen in recent years come down to the last day and come down to points.
Mm.
So, you know, it, as Pat mentioned, it will be very, very crucial that they do put up a serious number. England having only beaten them 46-15 last week, which, you know, if you top that now this week, it'll stand Ireland in good stead, I think, towards the end.
I prefer to rest some players and go for the Grand Slam myself.
But you're like, yeah. I mean, we all expect Ireland to win this handy with Conor O'Shea over Italy and whatever. But if you do take a team lightly, that is when you get caught. Yeah, so
that's true.
But they do have 2 weeks to the next game anyway. Yeah. So if they were playing England next week, it's fair enough. But I think,
would you not go out and try and batter them in the first half and then take off as many of their frontline guys?
That'd be the ideal.
Well, I imagine that's what they do.
And yeah.
There is no try scoring market as yet, but you would imagine if Larmour makes the bench, you'd imagine he'd come on maybe the last 20 minutes, by which time Italy might be surely will be flagging, and he could be one to look out for just to get a debut try, because I'd say the Italy rear guard, he's probably the last person that'll want to see running at them come the last 20 minutes.
Yeah, just on the first try score markets as well, another double odds initiative by Ladbrokes on the rugby on all Six Nations matches throughout the whole tournament. Double odds, if you're winning first try score, goes on to score a second at any stage during the 80 minutes in all of our Republic of Ireland and Northern Ireland shops, so get stuck in.
I do like, though, what Conor O'Shea is doing with Italy. He's trying to make them a bit more attacking. Like, up front, they like the ugly game, and likes of Kasia Vanni up front, and they weren't great to watch. And when he's got Harlequins, he did play a great brand of rugby. And I think it'd be similar. I kind of think of it as a similar thing as, like, if Eddie Howe, or attacking manager, took over the Ireland soccer team. Like, we'd probably get hammered at the start, but then eventually, in the long term, it might be for the best for the country, which I think is going to happen with Italy in the long term. Conor O'Shea will make them better, but there might be some hammerings on the way, though.
Here's one for you, Shane. You do like a half-time, full-time bet.
Oh, I love it.
So just if we, you know, we're all going to assume that Ireland will wipe the floor with Italy this weekend, but if they do seem to get off to a slow start, draw half-time, Ireland full-time, 40-1.
Oh, I don't even want a piece of that. Like, Ireland have scored 9 tries in each of their last 2 games with Italy. That's just going to be a cakewalk.
Stranger things have happened.
Yeah, they haven't lost to them in Ireland, I think, since January 1997. A game which Conor O'Shea played in.
You are the king of stats. I mean, you obviously spent your whole week building up a stat to get on League Sunday or the Sunday game. We see you on it time and time.
I just have a good memory. That's
no, you're not.
No, so it's impossible to see Ireland.
Self-promotion is it's a real quality of yours. England versus Wales, lads. Wales unchanged. England have made 2 changes with Joseph going in for Ben Teo and Danny Kerr in for the injured Ben Youngs. What are the prices here, Shane?
Yeah, England 5-1 on the tie, 33s. Wales 4-1 against. And the handicap here, 12 points. England minus 12, 10-11. Wales plus 12, 10-11.
Yeah, I just... it's very hard to look past England. You know, they've only lost 1 match under Eddie Jones, and they're like a machine in the way they steamroll teams. But I think Wales, buoyed by their victory last week, I would think they could make it a 1-score game. They've won 3 times at Twickenham in the last decade since Warren Gatland took over. They hadn't won there 20 years before that. So I don't think Wales would be cowed by England the way the majority of teams that come to Twickenham tend to be. So I think Wales coming inside that 12 points market, 10-11, you know, it's not unbelievable odds, but I think it's something worth looking at. And you know, England weren't terribly convincing last week either, so you know, there could be just a bit of outside chance of an upset, but I think Wales would make it a very close game.
That was real written journalism coming to life there. The word cowed and the word buoyed using your sentence. That's the sort of thing you'd
sometimes
write.
Sometimes I find it hard to switch off. So.
Eamon, what do you fancy here?
Yeah, similar to Pat there, I do like that 12-point handicap for Wales. You know, England had Eddie Jones keeps harping on about all these injuries, but I've seen the lineup for the last game is still very strong. Ah, like if you go through it, like
poor Mountain of the worst variety.
He's a bit like Mourinho. He just loves the old mind games. But yeah, John's like, can I see England win? But I say it'd be tight, but England win for me.
I'm just going to have a shot in the dark here. Lee Halfpenny for the first try. He's 25-1 currently at Ladbrokes, and don't forget, if he gets a second, we'll double him out to 50-1. So that's cheeky. Just a pin job there, but you never know. We got one. Did he get one last week? Wales? He did get
I think he did.
Did he get? Well, there you go. Mm. So if he scores first and gets another one, it's 50-1 from 25 this weekend. Mm.
Scotland were cannon fodder for Wales last week, and you know they're at home to France this week. Like France surprised a lot of us with the way they went there. So to think that France plus 5 is 10-11, I know it's at Murrayfield, but still in all, that's pretty
even
good
the match betting itself, Shane, 1-2 Scotland, 25-1 the tie, and France at 7-4. I'd be all over France at 7-4 at those odds. Mm. Absolutely.
Every couple of years almost, there seems like Scotland were obviously quite strong from the mid 80s through the 90s. And since the turn of the millennium, they've been quite poor for the most part. And maybe every year, a couple of years, there's some groundswell of optimism that they're back, and then they flatter to deceive, which they did last week in Wales. So now maybe there'll be a response to that, but you look, France played far better against Ireland than Scotland did against Wales last week. So France is 7-4. I think I'd be fancying that a lot more than Scotland 1-2.
Yeah, I'd be the same. I like that 7-4. To be honest, I thought I really fancy Scotland against Wales last week, and I got that totally wrong. I think Scotland are capable on their day. Like their back line can be really effective. But I was really impressed with France. Obviously, the new coach, they seem to know what they're doing now compared to the last coach, which was just a mess. And I think 7-4 is great value.
Mm-hmm. Just on the 10-point win of margins market as well. With Ladbrokes, France to win by 1-10. So if you want to stretch out that 7-4 and you think they're going to win by 1-10, which looks, if they are going to win, I don't think they'll hammer them, but this looks a realistic, you know, winning margin. 1-10 is 13-5. So if you think the 7-4 is still a bit too skinny about France, you can bump it out to 13-5 to win by 1-10.
You never put it beyond Scotland getting absolutely paddled by France. So that's the Six Nations this weekend. The horse racing then at Newbury. Shane, the Betfair hurdle is the feature this weekend. You fancy Waterlord?
Yeah, I do indeed. I'm actually, just bear with me one second, looking for these notes that I had written down. Oh, I have it here. Yeah, Waterlord, he's around about 12-1. The decks, they come in just in the last hour, so he has made the cut. Waterlord will love the heavy ground, but he's actually flatbred. So I think it's good to soft at Newbury. I'm not 100% sure of the forecast, what it's to be like over the weekend, but if it does turn out in any way good or good to soft, an opening mark of 1.35 looks incredibly fair in what he's done so far. I'm around about 10 or 12-1. Looks decent value on the Betfair hurdle, a big race this weekend.
Yeah, I think it's always a great betting race, isn't it? It's fairly open. I can't imagine the favourite going off any shorter than about 8-1 or something like that. So it's a great each way race. Probably going to be, actually haven't seen the decks, but it must be about 30 runners.
Down to 24 now.
24. So you'd still get, would you get first four or five, Shane?
Yeah, you'll get the first four.
So the two I like there are Nicky Henderson's ones, Verdana Blue and Lock Derg Spirit. They're both 14-1. They're kind of both unexposed. Verdana Blue is a bit high in the weights, maybe, but it seems to be improving all the time. It ran a very good race in the Mayor's Hurdle at Cheltenham last year, and then Lock Derg Spirit similarly hasn't run in 91 days. I'd say Henderson's had this race in mind for a long time after it finished second to London Prize, and that London Prize went on and had every chance to big handicap at Ascot, I think, when it fell at the second last. It's looking like he's going to run a big race. So they could be two good ones.
Okay, so the Game Spirit Chase then is at 3:00. Altior unbeaten in 11 races over jumps, but back after a wind surgery.
Yeah, first run after this wind up, which was, the Racing Post came out and said they were going to be putting it in the newspapers as of the turn of the year, which I think it's a lot of people have been on the fence about that. It can be good or bad info for the average punter. And Altior, you mentioned he's unbeaten in 11. He is coming back. And Henderson also spoke during the week about the fact that it was a hilarious quote, really. He said, on one hand, I'd be very wary of him coming back after having the wind up, and he's more vulnerable now than he has ever been. And in the same kind of quote, he said, but his work at home has been frightening. So what what do you take out of that is anyone's guess. He's currently around about 8 to 11 for the game. Spirit Politolog is in here, however, as well, who's been a really, really good improver over this kind of trip over the season for Paul Nichols, and he seems to be on the improve as well. I think Algyar could be very vulnerable. He's a very sharp price for the champion chase as it stands as well, so it'll I wouldn't be getting stuck in at odds on about Algyar anyway.
No, there's always that risk, I think, when coming back from injury. Like, Henderson can see him going great in the galvs, but when the jockey presses the buttons on the day, you never know what's quite underneath. And but at the same time, Altier's best form is just scarily good. Like, if you go back to Stream Novice Hurdle, he won at Cheltenham a few years ago. You had Min Seven Lengths in back in second, who's gone on to be very good. And the horse back in third, I think a further 2.5 lengths back. So Altier better by around 10 lengths. Yeah. Boover there is now long odds on for the favourite. And you could go further back again. Super Sunday, I think, finished seventh, who's now Stayers Hurdle
favourite.
Yeah, I think
that's easily one of the best Supreme Novice Hurdles we've seen in
Petit
the last
Mouchard
10 or 15
was
years.
Eight, was so
the form has worked out incredibly well.
Yeah, if Altier is at his best, I think he hoses in, but it's always this question mark when they come back from injury. Look at Faheen, look at
there's been a lot of
examples recently, hasn't there? Like, so I was going to mention one, I don't know, quickly. Rich's been banging on this about the source called Benny Deduce for a while now. It's a mare. He's kind of, I think his quote was, it could be anything. And he's the owner who had any power. And like, so Vroom Vroom Maggie's had some of the best mares we've seen in recent times. And he puts this horse up there, I think. So it's running at Nace on Sunday.
At least the chase.
Yeah.
The 320 mares.
It could be long odds on. But if it's not, if it's round evens, I think, I'll lump on that myself. Because Richie loves this horse. And, I'm not sure where it's going to run at Cheltenham. It could run over hurdles or chases, I reckon. So it's one worth following.
Very briefly, Shane, as well, before we move off the race, and just in your ROI shops, your Republic of Ireland shops over the weekend, do check out the 5-1 winner free bet offer at Newbury and at Wolverhampton on Saturday, and at Punchestown on Sunday. So simply back a winner at 5-1 or bigger, and you'll be entitled to free bet matching your stake. That's all of our Republic of Ireland shops at Newbury, Wolves and Punchestown.
Good stuff. You wanted to have a quick little chat about the darts as well.
Yeah, just very briefly. We had the opening night last weekend of the Premier League in the Point here in Dublin. Actually, I was at it as well. It was good crack. It always is good crack.
Was it rowdy?
To be fair, the section I was in was quite rowdy as it turned out, which I was quite taken aback by, because usually it's not. And it was interesting as well. Everyone pretty much filtered out after the second last match. The last match was the Girl and Price match. That ended up being a draw. So I think that the crowd had seen enough. But
what night of the week was it now?
It was a Thursday night.
People at work in the morning.
That's what
they were
sensible.
Probably well tuned up.
Very
at that
sensible.
Stage.
Yeah. Another good card on this week in Cardiff. So everybody will be cheering on for Girl and Price, the local lad, former rugby player actually turned darts player. I think, Mensur Sulevic at 15-8 is definitely a value to beat Barney. He got off to a great start against Simon Whitlock last week, but ended up losing the match. I think it was Simon Whitlock's highest ever TV average in any tournament. And this is his tournament as well. I mean, I actually backed him for the World Championship, Simon Whitlock, at a massive price over. I think he was 125-1 or something like that. Didn't fire at all after he had gotten to the final of the Grand Prix against Daryl Gurney. And he actually said after that match that the Premier League was his target, so I don't even think he was fully tuned up for the World Championship at Ali Pali. He takes on Rob Cross, who has struggled to win a match since he's actually beaten Phil Taylor in the final.
It's hard to accept he's 27, isn't it? Like, he looks like he could be handing us all Werther's originals. He's
Oh, absolutely, yeah. But in terms of his form, he has not been in the best of form lately since he demolished Phil Taylor in the World Final. There's a couple of bets that I was looking at here. Whitlock at 12-1 to get the highest checkout of the night, I think could be worth a couple of quid, considering he's more than likely going to be forced to take out three-figure checkouts tonight against Cross, and at 12-1 to get the highest checkout of the night, along with actually plus 2.5 about Whitlock, so it's 10-11. So I like that bet as well.
Okay, bets of the week, lads. Pat, just before we wrap up.
Yeah, I'm down in Salt Hill on Sunday for Galway Mayo. There's historically, traditionally, very little between the sides. They haven't drawn since 1992, which is 27. They've played 27 games.
You'll see that on League Sunday now from Pat Norton.
Well, it depends what the outcome is and if the producers decide to take my tweet. But
what do you have on them?
No. I couldn't possibly comment. But yeah, so they haven't drawn for what, 26 years in league or championship. They've played 27 times in the interim. 8 of those games have been decided by a single point. So Galway beat them by a point in last year's championship. It's their first league meeting since 2011. I just think a stalemate is long overdue in this game.
And have you written an article about this for the Mirror with all these stats? Haven't you?
No, I was saving it especially for this podcast.
That'll be in Saturday's paper, lads. Pick up a copy of the Mirror.
Possibly, yeah. But I couldn't. If I told you, I'd have to kill you. I just think 15-2. They had for two counties that there's a slip of paper between them historically. They're long overdue a draw. 15-2 is worth a punt, in my opinion.
Mm. Shane?
A couple for me, actually, Shane. Firstly, on the racing front, I'm going to tip up Waterlord in the big race at Newbury at the weekend. Just to mention as well, very briefly, Native River is out this weekend as well. He runs in the Denman Chase on Newbury's card as well. It'd be good to see him back in action, and he's sure to be short odds as well. Waterlord for the Betfair Chase. And in the darts this evening in Cardiff, I'm going to go with a double. Barney to beat Whitlock. Simon Whitlock plus 2.5 against Rob Cross, and Sulevich to beat Barney. So Sulevich to beat Barney and Whitlock plus 2.5 against Cross pays 9-2. And those my two bets.
Eamon,
the weekend.
Yeah, I think I'll go for one in the racing for a Loch Derg Spirit and the Betfair Hurdle. I think 14-1, good each way bet. And then my chance to treble on France to beat
Scotland.
Altier and Benny the Deuce as well. So two horses of treble there. Might be worth us a few quid.
Good stuff, lads. Mm. So I think we've it all said. From myself, Shane Stapleton, Shane Mahon, thank you very much. Pat Nolan from The Mirror and Eamon Doggett from The Mirror. Don't forget, you can follow us on Spotify and iTunes. We'll talk to you again next week.
The Back Page, brought to you by Mirror Sport and backed by Ladbrokes.